Yo, I put it like wow, this that sound. These oaks don't work hard like me, I hope they know by now. Baobab, stand my ground. Throw these money trees, go overseas like Percy Tau. I make sure you stay around, quiet when I'm under loud. No negatives allowed, me positivity took a vow. I always play to win, don't anticipate loss. Mind always in the cloud, my boy. Never think about the drop, never ever ever think about the drop.
Welcome to it, sports fans. It is the MKT show. I'm MKT. Feels good. Feels good. It's good to be great. We are down in George, the Mutt, proudly presented by UTMB in our very fine South Africa. That's where we are. The World Series, that is the Ultra Trail Mont Blanc, has decided to come to South Africa. What a pleasure it is to have them here. It's cooking now. As the youth say, it's cooking now. Everyone's starting to arrive. I'm hearing some accents from a different continent, some French ones, you know, some Italians, some Spanish folks, and we are good. We are good. We are cooking. Let them cook, the youth say. The other people who cook, they try and, elicit the past to bring it into the future. They call them amasangoma. I've got my guy here. Yesterday, he gave us some tasty picks. He says, I'm still cooking. I'm still ngisahlanganisa amathambo. He is the sports sangoma, Sanele Shabalala. Or Shabs to his good mate. Sanele, my good mate, who's with us here today. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, I'm okay, and you, bud. Thanks for having me back again today.
Absolutely.
And hopefully I've got a bit more direction for the weekend, for the weekend trips.
You're part of the furniture now. You mustn't say thanks for having us. You're part of the furniture. We want you. The people are paying for blood if you're not here.
Yeah, I've even got a couple of ponies running in a couple of minutes.
All right, the ponies. He's a man of the horses. He says the ponies. That's what he calls them, the ponies. All right, Chaba, we'll come back to you in a little bit. Let me tell you what's coming up on the show today. Chelsea, my beloved Chelsea, have fired Maurizio Pochettino. Madness or the right way to go? They just couldn't agree to stay together. And Manchester United, their fine prized asset, the man who fed the kids, the man who has an MBE, OBE, every single award, is not going to the Euros. He's not even in the provisional squad. Forget about the final squad. Marcus Rashford controversially left out of the England squad provisionally for now. We'll talk about that. Replacing Jurgen Klopp, what is that going to be like for Liverpool, and much, much more. All of that is coming up. We got a bumper edition show. One of my heroes, Robin Owen, she'll be with us today. She'll be online, masters in mechanical engineering, so she's not an idiot and one of the finest athletes the Republic of South Africa has ever produced. All that, much, much more coming up on the MKT show. MKT show, we have returned. We have returned. I went to bed last night feeling good. You know, long day yesterday. I thought to myself, everything's normal. Chelsea have finished playing football. I can't get stressed out by them. I'm currently not in a romantic situation, so I don't really have too much stress in that sense at home. So it was a good night. I had some lovely dinner, and I went to bed. I thought, Chelsea cannot hurt me anymore. They're not, for now, the hurt, the stress, it's over. And then I wake up and I hear Maurizio Pochettino has been sacked. And I thought to myself, can I just have one normal day with this football club? One normal day. Here's my take on the Pochettino thing. I've been sort of up and down, right? I've been up and down. Sack him, don't sack him. It's not looking right. Because one thing I'm not going to accept is injuries as the excuse. Everyone's injured. I don't want to hear that. Everyone's got injuries. Do not give me that. But here's what I think about Mauricio Pochettino. And I believe this in all relationships. I say to everybody, a 9 should never date a 6. Financial, educational, because the romantic notion in life is opposites attract. But as my father always used to say to me, opposites attract, our similarities keep us together. So when you date a 9 and a 6, that difference of a 3 is tension you are adding into the relationship, which will exist anyway. Relationships are complicated anyway. Chelsea are a 9. They are the supermodel who also have a science degree. And Mauricio Pochettino is just a 6, a normal guy who would be nice, maybe, you know, the kind of person you date, you don't marry. And that was always a problem from the beginning for me with the Pochettino-Chelsea relationship. There's a reason why PSG didn't work. There's a difference between Tottenham, PSG, and what you have to deal with at Chelsea. At the big clubs, you don't have to coach. You don't have to coach. What you have to do is psychologically manage the best players in the world to say, listen, do this thing, believe as a team, and you will win. That's basically what you have to do. Because you're not telling Cole Palmer how to play football. Now, at the young Tottenham team, he kind of had to do a lot of coaching and motivation. And that's where you kind of have to do that. And that has its limitations. Mauricio Pochettino is not made for a Chelsea. He's not made for a PSG. What he's made for is a Tottenham. He's probably better as a Diego Simeone, getting people to overachieve. So yesterday, am I shocked? No. Should I be shocked? No. Because it was doomed from the beginning. A 9 should never date a 6. However, here is the problem. Chelsea are now the supermodel with a drug problem. Because it's awesome to date a supermodel when you walk out in public and she's holding your hand. But then at home, it is chaos and disaster. Chelsea are now the one you never want to marry. What serious manager is going to come to Chelsea when you are moving on to your 5th manager in 2 years? A disaster all round, a PR disaster all round. No serious manager will take this job moving forward. And I look forward to seeing how Todd Boehly solves this one. Shaba, your take on Mauricio Pochettino getting the sack at Chelsea?
What an absolute disaster. It's a travesty. To your analogy, I think the problem lies right there, as you deluded Chelsea fans often do. I'm presuming you guys think you're a 9 and Pochettino is a 6, where it could be the other way around. But anyway.
Well, we've got 2 Champions League titles in the last decade. What are we talking about here? We have a Europa League. We have 5 Premier League titles in the last 20 years. What are we talking about here?
MKT, listen, bud. The guy was on a bit of a run, 5 in a row. He is galvanizing the fans a bit. Things were improving. And the problem is, you don't often come across, as a 6, you don't often come across too many 9s out there. So I think you guys need to temper your expectations. You should have stuck with him. I think your problem now is bigger than Liverpool's problem.
Talk to me.
Yeah, well, you know, they've got old slot coming in. You guys are still going to be out there in the market. There's plenty of managers out there looking for a job. But you, as you said before, you've been through 5 managers in a very short space of time. I think just over a year ago, you had Potter, who then was replaced by Lampard, and then in came Pochettino. And to be fair, out of the 3, let's be honest, the latter is the one who's kind of looked the most promising. Mm. And now to be able to start all over just because of Champions League and thinking that you're a 9, being a big club, I think that therein lies the problem. But all I'll say is good luck to you, bud. And yeah, we'll have a good chat about this when we see who your appointment is.
Yeah, I mean that is the next problem, right? Is that what do you do now in terms of employing? Because they're talking about, I was reading articles this morning, like Vincent Kompany, Thomas Frank, like, what are we talking about? Like, this is not a muck around club. As I said, Chelsea are now part of the establishment. In the last 20 years, They are the most dominant club in England. Man City are starting to do their thing. But we're talking about 5 Premier League titles, 3 European titles, multiple FA Cups. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have Thomas Frank coming into Chelsea. Surely not, eh?
Yeah, but also, you must remember, some of these coaches kind of grow in the role. So, you know, that 6 can be turned into a 9 with a bit of work and a couple of touch-ups. And I think that's what you had in Pochettino. And I think the problem may be at the ownership level, maybe expecting too much too soon.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've got a quote here upon his exit, you know, and sort of, he's kind of grateful. And you know how corporates kind of position it is. It was an amicable breakup. I've had 2 serious girlfriends. And Shaba, I'm happy for you to step in here. I've never heard of an amicable breakup. Maybe I'm not mature enough. Why do corporates do that? Like, you fired the guy. You guys are billionaires. Why don't you just say, we fired the guy? There's no nice way to break up, is there?
Yeah, I think on both ends of the table, whether it was their dinner 2 nights ago, whatever it may be, they've both got reputations to maintain at the end of the day. So amicable kind of looks good for the corporates. Well, and on the other end, for Pochettino, the amicable definitely worked for him, especially going out there and looking for another job in a short space of time. He's bounced around quite a bit, but from Tottenham, look, he didn't get any trophies or anything, but he went across to PSG, grabbed the trophy there, and he was starting to make Chelsea look okay with, I think, 5 or 6 successive wins in a row come the end of the season. I just think, this management issue is a big problem, not only in the Premier League, but also just worldwide. You know, South African football has a very similar problem, if not worse, with managers, when it comes to managers. But look, the dinner has happened, the final, the last supper has happened, they've had their amicable breakup, as they say, and we've got to move on. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Chelsea, good luck.
No, it's a big problem. Love to hear from people at home. At MKT Inspires, there it is. I mean, Chelsea will have a different manager for the 5th time in 2 years. It was Tuchel, it was Lampard, it was Potter. It's now Maurizio Pochettino, and we're moving on to number 5. You know, I'll quickly finish off on this Chelsea matter. My mom used to say to me, careful about getting too many girlfriends and breaking up with them, and it's the same in marriage. And she used to use this analogy, and I love it. I use it all the time now. Is, I will forgive you the first divorce, because, you know, life is difficult. You get divorced. I'll forgive you the second divorce, because she had kids, you had kids, you weren't ready, you were kind of codependent in your second marriage. Once you get divorced the 3rd time, that's a you problem. Now you've got issues. Chelsea are now that person, right? You know that person, you look at them, you're like, they're on 4 divorces in 2 years. Now you're that guy where even your own mother now, you can't defend what Chelsea did. Even your own mother, once you've had 4 girlfriends in 2 years, even your own mother can't defend that type of nonsense. Chelsea are those guys now. They are those guys. I'd love to hear from fans. Who do you think should be the Chelsea manager moving forward? And should it be Vincent Kompany? Because that is the favorite. The bookmakers are saying Vincent Kompany or Thomas Frank, the last time I checked the odds this morning, will be the favorite. I mean, 5 managers in 2 years. What a bloody disgrace. Speaking of a disgrace, the lady up north in Zimbabwe, Disgrace is what they called her. Old Bobby Mugabe's wife, Disgrace. Shaba, I want to move on to the next topic. Marcus Rashford, he obviously fed the kids. They love him. You know what I mean? So they love this guy. But yeah, he has not made the squad. So I want to quickly just show people what the squad is. And you know, Southgate's under some pressure. He's Mr. Nice Guy. He's going to wear his 3-piece suit. But England are now under pressure. This is another coming of the golden generation. And before I come to you, Shaba, I just want to give my take on Marcus Rashford. You know, somebody wise that I used to talk to used to say to me, keep the main thing, the main thing. And I appreciate Marcus Rashford feeding the kids. I appreciate him being a good guy. But at the end of the day, what pays the bills and what allows him to be that guy is the football. And it's become about other stuff. I've watched Marcus Rashford unravel. The tragedy of Dele Alli that has been shown now. I said 2 years ago, something's wrong there. This behavior is abnormal. Marcus Rashford's behavior in the last 2 years has been abnormal. He's on £350,000 a week at Manchester United as a Manchester United lad. That should be the peak for a footballer. Now, is Marcus Rashford unhappy with football? It's possible. But I'm telling you, this young man's behavior at the moment is abnormal. His play in the last 18 months is more Everton than Manchester United. Some people might say Man United came eighth. It's not that far above Everton. But his play has been Everton Burnley level over the last 18 months. Don't romanticize him because he fed the kids. He is not a charity. Marcus Rashford is a marketing machine for Manchester United and has failed to deliver on the football pitch. I don't know why people are up in arms. I don't know why this is controversial. He is not good enough. Here's the next problem. You can't be like a South African footballer, my man. A 25-year-old youngster, a developing youngster at 25, can't happen. Umdala now. Marcus Rashford is now, should be a senior leader and should be breaking into the team like Phil Foden and putting it on his back. Marcus Rashford has not developed. This player has not developed outside of pace and cut inside and shoot. I don't know what he's better at now than he was when he was 19 years old. This is not controversial for me. He's not better than Grealish. He's not better than Harvey Barnes. He's not better than young Gordon at Newcastle. I'm sorry. Don't allow the fact that you like him to make you see him as a better player than he is. Marcus Rashford is not a Man United player. And the last thing I want to say is this. I find it absolutely disgusting when millionaires sulk to the working class who have an opinion about their football club. I am sorry. When you sign a contract, part of it, listen, I never played at Marcus Rashford's level, but I played academy football in the United Kingdom. When you step into that arena, I don't want to hear sulking. I don't want to hear it. And you are not allowed to tell fans to shut up. His sulking this year has been absolutely deplorable, and I feel nothing for him if he's going to sulk. If you've got mental health challenges, step away from the game. I'm sorry, you cannot have more empathy for millionaires than you do for the regular man on the street. For Marcus Rashford, I have zero empathy. You're not allowed to sulk. To whom much is given, much is expected. You cannot sulk on £350,000 and be telling the crowd to keep quiet. I'm sorry. That, as you say, that ain't it, cuz. That ain't it. So this is the England squad. For those of you on the podcast, come and join us on YouTube. Shaba, your take. Marcus Rashford has been left out of the squad. Controversial, or do you think, hey, what are we even talking about?
Yeah, I don't think it's too controversial, given, as you're saying, the boy's attitude in the last couple of months. It has been quite sad to watch it happen. Such a great player. But I presume then there's maybe an issue with his daddy, I guess, with Altena. And, you know, when we're kids and your dad and you tend to disagree on something and you try to stand your ground and prove your points, it kind of can all go to shit, you know. but the guy's a good player. I think he, unfortunately, as Southgate put it, there's other players in that part of the field that have been doing a lot better in the last couple of months. What would maybe help Rashford out is Ten Hag leaving or him looking for a new home. He's a great striker, and who knows, maybe the Emirates will welcome him with open arms.
Whoa, okay, that's interesting. So as an Arsenal fan, would you take Marcus Rashford over Martinelli or Trossard? Because you can't play front.
I would just add him to the mix. It's the kind of 20 goals you need a season in the box, and you know he could add to us. It's just maybe he comes at a hefty price, and that would probably be the issue. But I wouldn't get rid of Martinelli over him. No, but if we could find a way of adding him to the mix, why not?
So you're saying Rashford to come in as a striker, number 9 for Arsenal? You take that?
I would consider it for sure. I think we're missing those in the box kind of goals, 20 to 25 goals in the season. That could be the kind of difference we're looking for.
Okay, but now it's listen, this is kind of like having a girlfriend. You can't have, it doesn't often work when you have more than one. You'd need to get rid of Jesus, or you need to get rid of Kai Havertz. Who goes? Because Shaba, you can't just add, you must plus plus minus. You know what I'm saying? So as an Arsenal fan, I want to put you on the hot seat here. You've got to get rid of Havertz or Jesus. Both of those guys aren't going to be happy to sit on the bench, surely.
Yeah, as the famous Shakira song goes, 60 million and he scores a game. No way. Havertz is going nowhere. So it's just maybe questionable. So maybe that could be the angle. You know, great player, but he's injured most of the time. Didn't quite do it for City. Hasn't quite done it for Arsenal. But Havertz, he's going nowhere.
So, okay. So, feet to the fire. What do you do with Rashford as Man United? Do you go Ten Hag? If you were a United fan, would you stick with Ten Hag and say, listen, if you need to sell him, let's push on? Or do you say, Eric, this is the local boy. He's one of our own, as they sing in the stands famously at the Stretford End. And do you let Ten Hag go and you try with another one? Because something's got to give here. Shaba, it's been 18 very awkward months. And this year was particularly awkward to watch, as you said, for the young man. Do you get rid of Ten Hag, or do you get rid of Rashford if you are a football man?
In my personal opinion, I would definitely look at the latter and get rid of Ten Hag. But then again, is any player greater than the team? That's the problem we're dealing with. I think I would have sooner got rid of Ten Hag than your boys getting rid of Pochettino, for sure. I think you guys are in serious stuff.
Yeah, no, we're in serious trouble there. And I'm... On a personal note, I'm worried about Marcus Rashford. Like, you know, this behavior of his is so abnormal. Like, dude, you're getting... I think something is bothering him off the field, because you're a millionaire, you're a footballer, you're at Manchester United, you're the face of Man United, and you're sulking. It's like, okay, if the football isn't making him happy, I think there's something wrong. Remember with Dele Alli, people were saying 2 years ago, like, something's wrong. Obviously, the circumstances, I hope, aren't as disgusting as what happened to Dele Alli, but I'm saying it's quite a similar pattern for me, and I think there might be something deeper with Rashford, because I just don't know why he can't be happy with being Man United's highest paid player and being a Manchester lad.
Yeah, definitely. Off the pitch issues definitely seem to be playing part of this. I'm sure it's not just daddy issues that he may have with Ten Hag, but yeah, I think a guy of that talent, maybe with the small break, now that he isn't going to the Euros and kind of seeing what he's missing out on, will maybe calm him down a bit and give him a fresh, kind of a fresh perspective come the new season later on this year. I think he's probably due a break. Maybe he needs to go spend some time on the beach somewhere in Ibiza or something and kind of clear his head. And then maybe he needs to have a amicable lunch with Ten Hag. I don't know.
Maybe he needs to, you know, I'm not too sure what his roots are in Africa. I think it might be Nigeria. I'm not too sure. That's a lazy assumption. But maybe he needs to come down south, go and see a Sangoma, shake the bones a little bit. Maybe the ancestors aren't giving him, maybe he hasn't come back to the motherland enough. Let's shake the bones. Let's throw the bones a little bit. And then it's Vula Masango from the ancestors. I don't know your thoughts. I know you Zulu guys are into that.
Yeah, I don't know about Rashford. I don't know if that'll give him any hope by doing that. I think the closest he'll get to that is probably finding somewhere outside of the UK and maybe asking someone to slaughter a chicken for him.
Hey, listen.
That always works.
At this stage, Listen, at this stage, you got to do what you got to do. Okay, quick one. Who would you replace Ten Hag with? Because you seem to be quite intent on him leaving. If you're Man United, who's on the market who can manage that job?
Oh, that's a tough question. There's plenty out there. I think I was looking at a graphic this morning of possibly 9 decent managers that are out of jobs. We won't go to Mourinho because that we could be debating forever. But I'll definitely look at someone like Zizou. Who knows?
His problem, though, is he doesn't speak English. Like, you just, or is that not an issue? Is football a global language?
Shiv, it's not his first rodeo. People adapt. And you know, there's plenty of coaches that go and coach English-speaking side that kind of just have to make it work, right? So you get an assistant, you get an interpreter, you make it work. At the end of the day, football is a global language, global sport, and it's more about the motivation the coach can give you and what kind of setup he can come with and what kind of positivity he can bring to the players and the fans.
He's a unique one. I'm glad you said Zidane, because I've always said, you know, he reminds me of a trust fund kid. You know, often trust fund kids around 25, 26, when mom and dad say, hey, you got to get out there. It's difficult for them because they've been cotton wool their whole life. Zinedine Zidane has never faced football adversity. He's been a wunderkind from Juventus to Real Madrid. And then Real Madrid, he's been treated like, it's almost like what I imagine in the 17th century royalty living in a palace, you know, where they don't have to mix with the help, people like us, the normal people. Is Zinedine Zidane has been on a trust fund because he's been Real Madrid player, Real Madrid C team coach, and then Real Madrid, we win the treble, and then he retires. Do you think moving out of the creme de la creme is something he could do? Because he doesn't strike me as, you know, Pep is like cosmopolitan, these other guys, Mourinho, Carlo Ancelotti. Zidane doesn't strike me as a guy who would handle it well if anybody was to doubt him. Because, you know, the whole media has always been, he's the greatest player. Then he was manager 3 in a row. Do you think he'd be able to handle adversity, especially in the Premier League? You know, those are sharks. They tore down Wenger, they tore down Mourinho, they tore down Pochettino. Like, the English press would be the first time he's got pushback in the history of football, probably.
Look, as a player, he also came across a lot of adversity, whether, you know, it was as a captain or on the international front with his controversial headbutts and all of that. Yes, they came at the tail end of his career, but I think he's not adverse to controversy or adverse to a bit of pressure. If he can kind of win over the fans with a couple of early victories, if he got into the job and kind of buy into that Manchester United culture, he's a very respected man, even more respected player, one of the best of our generation. And I think he could galvanize the Man United fans and the players, and maybe they could have a nice luncheon with the Glazers. Who knows?
Well, there you have it. The Sports Song almost saying Zinedine Zidane to replace Eric Ten Hag, and then Marcus Rashford's going to slaughter a chicken. Once he's done that, everything is going to be kosher. Remember, Man United, and it's been a problem now, this is their worst season in Premier League history. They finished 8th. My gosh. So who would want this poison chalice? Because remember, in Man United fans' minds, they are still Man United. They don't see themselves as the eroding club that is now going on 11 years without a Premier League title. In reality, their average position, by the way, over the last decade has been 7th now. So keep in mind that this job comes with Champions League expectations, but the squad in reality has shown you what it is. There's a great saying in football, the table doesn't lie, you are what you are. We're going to take a little break, and on the other side, we're going to talk a little bit about this. We heard from Shaba, he said Marcus Rashford's daddy issues with Erik ten Hag. Well, do Liverpool have that issue? You know, sometimes you have a father figure, they may leave your life, a mother figure that leaves your life. And, you know, it's easy to replace certain things, but can you replace the person? Jurgen Klopp has left Liverpool. I'd like to have a chat about what does that mean for his legacy? What does that mean for Liverpool? How difficult is it going to be to replace a man that's basically guaranteed a statue after one title? He was beloved. You saw it took 45 minutes for fans to leave the stadium after the game. That's how big those celebrations were. Jurgen Klopp and much, much more on the other side. MKT Show. Welcome back. We're George. I'm MKT. The Mutt. That's not hut misspelt. Mountain Ultra Trail by UTMB. Why am I wearing this hoodie? It's because the team and I are down here in George. Ultra Trail Mont Blanc, the World Series, has come down here and said, you know what, let's see what's cutting in Africa. The only race at the moment in Africa, Mauritius will join soon, where you can collect your stones to go and run at the Ultra Mont Blanc. Hour two, we'll get into that a little bit more. Emily Robertson, who's not a granny, by the way, despite all beliefs, she'll join us in the second hour. One of my heroes, Robin Owen, will join us in the second hour. Plenty to come on the Ultra Trail Mont Blanc, etc., etc., and what we're doing at the Mutt and what will unravel here. But for now, let's get back into the football talk. You know, it's been an interesting one. You know, the Liverpool dilemma and the Jurgen Klopp dilemma has been such an interesting one for me because I've never seen a man get graded on a curve as hard as I have this guy. You know, this idea that it's Man City's fault that they're a dynasty is hysterical to me. And Liverpool fans keep telling me this is the greatest manager they've had, this and that and that. I'm like, okay, cool, but really? Is this where we are? Are we comparing him to Wenger? Are we comparing him to the great Jose Mourinho? Are we comparing him to this guy? Because let's not forget, we can romanticize him because it's cool to have a beer with him. But let's not forget, he's got one Premier League title in 30 years. He's got one Premier League title in 30 years. That's Liverpool, by the way. So let's also not create a narrative that Jurgen Klopp has like 10 medals, right? He's got one Premier League title, a Champions League, and really two Carabao Cups. That's the local performance. Now, his thing is he has connected with the fans. But please, guys, just because you like somebody, it doesn't mean you misinflate their value. It's not how it works. So here's my thought on Jurgen Klopp. It's going to be easy to replace the tactics. That's not the difficult part to replace. But how do you replace the man? Because sometimes I think people don't realize the mammoth task in leadership isn't just the ones and twos, the formations. All of these guys have Pro A license coaching. It's not the tactics. Forget about that. That's the easy part. How do you manage a club like Liverpool as a whole? Because Liverpool Football Club is not separate to the city. That's what you need to realize. Replacing that and his connection to the fans, which is very, very special, is going to be the most difficult part. Because you know what Jurgen did? He took them into their hearts and they took him into their hearts. You know why? Liverpool has always been the third city in the United Kingdom. It goes London, it goes Manchester, and it goes Liverpool. And he is the underdog. Borussia Dortmund, always the guys that are fighting for the little guy. Right? Doesn't that feel like Jurgen Klopp? Doesn't he feel like a guy you can have beers with? But I'm sorry. All of this legendary talk and they would have won if Man City weren't there. They didn't. Jose Mourinho didn't make those excuses when Alex Ferguson was there. I don't remember Arsene Wenger, correct me if I'm wrong, making excuses in peak Fergie times when he won three titles and went undefeated. Invincibles, maybe you've heard of them. I don't remember those excuses for those guys. Football and humanity surely hasn't changed that much. It's only been 15 years. So I don't remember these excuses for Arsene Wenger. Why are we making them for this guy? I do not understand that. I am very, very uncomfortable with him being mentioned in the same breath as the great Jose Mourinho and the great Arsene Wenger. And he's obviously not in the Pep Guardiola or Ferguson conversation. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. But I think the biggest struggle isn't going to be replacing the tactics. It is going to be replacing the man. And I'll finish off on this. And it's a truth I think Liverpool fans don't want to hear. We're just regressing to the median here. It's no longer... stop this thing of Liverpool are a major club. Yes, when Kenny Dalglish and them were in their pomp, that was the 80s. That was the 80s. You must remember Liverpool went 30 years without a title. In the Premier League context, Liverpool are an also-ran. You are a fifth, sixth club. You rudely interrupted the order of things. It goes Manchester United, it now goes Manchester City, it goes Chelsea, and then it goes the rest of you within the Premier League context. Football didn't start in 1992, but also football started in 1992. We kind of know that. I know the romantic, the British fever will say, no. It didn't start in, football kind of started in 1992. The real thing started in 1992. The Premier League is when it went global. And that is the time to separate the men from the boys. Liverpool are regressing to what they are. If you come fourth next season, don't be upset. That's what you really are. You've got one title in 30 years. Shaba, I want to hear your thoughts, bro. This Jurgen Klopp loving, I don't get it. I don't know why he's being mentioned in those echelons. Your thoughts on Jurgen Klopp leaving, and will Liverpool be able to replace him?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think also you must understand your audience that you're kind of talking to. And
I think we've lost Shaba there, but no worries. He'll come back to us in a little bit. We'll get the song on my back online, but I think what he's alluding to, and we'll get him back in a little bit. You know, it's a tricky one, because you've got to understand, if you're talking to Liverpool fans, it's almost like they've lost a father figure. I had a friend send me a text the other day, and he said to me, I don't want to be Man United. His nightmare is, I just don't want to be Man United. And I was like, dude, what do you mean? He goes, I don't want to be irrelevant for another 10 years. You know, his whole childhood, Liverpool were just that other club in Liverpool. They might as well have been Everton. So his greatest fear was, I just don't want to be 10 years, 20 years, another 30 years without a title. And Jurgen Klopp didn't just make them competitive in his mind. He says he made them elite. And listen, hell of a run. You know, as the youth say, hell of a run. Hell of a run. Second best to Man City. I don't know why we're making excuses, but the guys are happy. And you know what it is with football fans. Sometimes football fans will take a bad result if they feel connected to you. And with Jurgen, I think it kind of feels like he is just pouring it on. You know what I mean? Like with Jurgen, it just feels like he has put his absolute heart into it. And football fans appreciate that, man. Football fans are simple people. They don't want a lot of things. They don't want a lot of things. So as for Liverpool fans, you know, I'd love to hear, what are your thoughts? Is Arne Slot on an impossible wicket? Because sometimes, you know, in life, you don't want to be the guy replacing the guy. You want to be the guy replacing the guy who replaced the guy. Because it is a nightmare to be the second person, you know? Like, Tim Cook isn't getting the same love, even though he's actually sort of 3 or 4x'd the Apple brand, but he's still not Steve Jobs, you know what I mean? Because Steve Jobs and Wozniak, the Woz and Steve Jobs are the guys. And it's almost impossible to step in there to replace the affection that the world has for those homeboys. So Tim Cook doesn't get that love. How do you replace what Jurgen Klopp has built over 8 years? How do you replace the man? Forget the results. How do you replace the man? And I think that's going to be the big challenge. And I'd love to hear from Liverpool fans. Your thoughts on Arne Slot. Is he the guy? We've got the song on my back. Sangoma, you're alluding to, you've got to be conscious about your audience. I'll let you pick it up from there. Your thoughts on Klopp and whether we can make this thing happen if you're a Liverpool fan.
Yeah, no, Klopp's fans are some of the most irritating out there. But I do realize that their first trophy in 50 years is quite a big thing. And I don't think it's about replacing the character necessarily. That's almost impossible to do. But as for the new boy on the block, Mr. Arne Slot, as you pronounce it, let's see how he goes. He's quite a fiery character. He's got a half-decent record as a player. And as a manager, he's done fairly well in the couple of years he's been managing. I think, as I heard Klopp once say, I think it's more about obviously how you go out than how you come in, but in terms of coming in, he needs to come in and kind of win over the Scousers, because they're not an easy bunch, as you should know. He's done well, and just to do a small comparison, his win percentage record is better than Chelsea's last four coaches. So you can comment on that.
There was no need for that.
So just give the boy a chance.
There was no need. Wait, there was no need for what you just did there. Why did you bring Chelsea into it?
Yeah, because I think you're running away just now when you were talking about three big cities and three big teams and the rest. I think you should reassess and kind of look at home and start worrying about your own issues than anyone else's. Don't throw stones, as they say, bud.
People in glass houses. So are you saying I must sort out, are you saying I'm being that guy who is having problems with his girlfriend, but now I'm giving advice to other people about how to fix their relationship? I haven't even fixed mine. Is that what you're suggesting?
You hit the nail on the head. You tell me whether you're a 9 or 6, bud. Then we can get back to that conversation.
Absolutely incredible. I can't actually believe this. Listen, as you've said, replacing the man will be impossible. But I think a reality for Liverpool that they have to face, yes, they've been incredible under Klopp, but I think sometimes we romanticize people we like, right? Is also, Liverpool are one title in 30 years. You know the great Arsene Wenger won 3 titles in a decade, right? That first decade was unreal, I'm sure, for you even as an Arsenal fan. So where would you rank Jurgen Klopp? And am I underrating him? Because for me, let me give you my order and I'll be happy to hear yours. For me, it's Alex Ferguson. It's Jose Mourinho, because he had to compete against Fergie and beat Fergie and has the greatest team, I believe, season ever. To concede 15 goals will never happen in any football league in the world. I don't care what division, in a whole season. Peak Fergie, peak Wenger. So for me, Mourinho is second. Pep is third. And then I'll let you have the rest, whoever you want. Where would you put Jurgen Klopp in and amongst those top echelons?
You love the rest conversation or comments, don't you?
Yeah, well, Chelsea, not everyone can be elite. It's the rest. I mean,
yeah, look, give the guy a chance, I think. Give him a chance. Jurgen, look, fully based, just based on trophy counts and titles, yes, he doesn't compete with the three you've listed, and I can agree with that. But he brought certain je ne sais quoi, some sort of togetherness that Liverpool is an 8 in their blood, as spouses. And he did something and played the type of football they haven't seen. And this generation of kids love him to bits, win or lose. He's the kind of guy, as you say, you want to go and have a drink with at the pub or go dancing with out of the nightclub and so on. Very relatable character. And he did enough. I think he did enough for what they needed. He brought them a trophy the first time in 30 years. And now, as long as they retain their players, I see the new coach is also referring to Virgil and Nunez and Salah, as long as he can retain that core of the team and comes in with the kind of character that I believe he is and kind of wins over the Scouts fans up front, then that gives him a bit of leeway to kind of figure things out for himself. But as long as he kind of keeps the core of the side, Klopp will forever be a legend. He was good at Dortmund. He was great at Liverpool. He bought their first title in 50 years. Deserves all the accolades that they give him. But to compare him to perhaps Pep and Fergie, who we may talk about just now, I think that's a bit of a stretch.
Oh, so you put Pep above Jose Mourinho?
Definitely.
Wow. Wow. Wow, really?
And he's not done yet. He's about to go back to back. He's about to do the Premier League and the FA Cup double, which has never happened in the history of the Premier League.
Wow. There you have it. Love to hear what people have to say. The Sang Oma says he would put Pep Guardiola above Jose Mourinho. Wowzers. Wowzers. I'm as the youth say, I'm shook. I'm shook right now. I'm shook at that statement. But I think that's a good segue to our final segment with the Sang Oma before he leaves us to go and throw the bones, because he's going to give us some winners this week. I want to talk about Pep Guardiola. As Sanele has just said, good old Shaba, my good friend Shaba, He's listen. There's a very funny story about why I call him my good friend. We'll tell it one day, but I need him to be with me because it's more of a visual story when I tell it. It's absolutely hysterical why I call him my good friend. And you'll often hear me say, not only is he my good friend, but he's with me here today. I'll tell that story sometime. There's a reason why I say that. But let's move on. Pep Guardiola. Enigma. Brilliant. Animated. He is what he is. 6 Premier League titles. 4 World Club titles. A treble. I mean, he's basically made the Carabao Cup, the Man City Invitational. 4 of those. 4 UEFA Super Cups. 3, you know, what a career. 3 Champions League titles in his time between Barcelona and Man City. Obviously lost to Chelsea. You know, 3 La Liga titles, Super Copa. I mean, just you can see it. If you're not on the podcast, apologies to you. If you're on the podcast, come and see us on YouTube and you can look at this list. Here's the thing about Pep Guardiola. He's been compared now to the great Sir Alex Ferguson. And I think you start to move into dangerous territory when you start to compare people who are the greatest with a guy who's coming up without matching his winning. Because ultimately, Fergie's thing is, he not only won, but he made it his dominion. He's got 13. And at that stage, you start to say, there are no longevity awards for Fergie. But to be around to win 13 titles. Do you understand? He won 50% of the league titles he participated in England. Forget about what he did at Aberdeen. Forget about all of that stuff. People are now saying Pep Guardiola is better than Sir Alex Ferguson. And like every good man and woman, I hate Manchester United. But whoa. Everybody calm down. Here I say you're doing too much. You're doing too much. It makes me sick to have to defend Sir Alex Ferguson. You're doing too much. Within the context of football, this is a man who did the 3 in a row twice. In the peak times, by the way. Not these little play times, when football was football. Back to back, 3 times. He gave you the only Ballon d'Or winner. He developed Cristiano Ronaldo into a precocious talent, into the best in the world. There's never been another Ballon d'Or winner that came out of England. Not a World Player of the Year that came out of the English Premier League. Michael Owen won it when it was like not a real thing. But not this real deal. He developed Cristiano Ronaldo. He developed Roy Keane. Brian Robson. He developed some of the greatest players this league's ever seen over and over and over. 13 titles. 13! I'm sorry, to even put anybody in that conversation until they've got 10. Just get into the double figure conversation to get into that conversation. This isn't a LeBron versus Jordan conversation because Jordan only won 6. LeBron has 4. So it's not like, oh, he's on a completely different level. Alex Ferguson is in a completely different stratosphere. 13 titles. Just please try and process that. I won't have it. I will not have it. It makes me sick to defend this man. But stop this now. Pep Guardiola, I get it. 6 and 7. 4 in a row. Okay, cool. History making. Can you do 10? Can you do 10? Because then I'll start to take the conversation seriously. And I'm not having the, you don't understand football well enough, in depth enough to contextualize. I'm sorry. 13. 13 titles in the best league in the world. That puts you in a different conversation, I'm afraid. And I can't even argue for Jose Mourinho in this context. Shabba, your thoughts? I know it kills you as an Arsenal fan because Fergie would have ruined your life in there. But I'm sorry, I can't have this chatter of Pep Guardiola being compared to Fergie in the Premier League context.
Yeah, look, you've got some very valid points there. 13 is 13. It is what it is. But I think definitely Pep has got time on his side. He's fairly young as a manager in comparison to some of the managers the Premier League has seen, as you would know, a couple of them on their way out this season. 13 titles is 13 titles, MK. I get it. But don't forget that Pep has got 12 of his own titles across 3 different leagues. So arguably, he's seen more top-playing leagues in Europe, and he's won a league title behind Fergie. And you can't discount the 6 out of 7 or the 4 in a row. Just to correct you there, it's 4 in a row, not 3 in a row. So he is who he is, and he's got a couple of, you know, he's got time on his side. He's got a bunch of years ahead of him. And for me, definitely, potentially, if not right now, will be greater than Mr. Ferguson.
Greater? So wait, how would you define that? Like, if he won five in a row, because he's not getting to 13, is he?
He won't get to 13 necessarily, agreed. But he will definitely surpass 13 league titles in the next 2 years across three different leagues. He might not get to the 13 at the Premier League, but already he's achieved more and better results than Fergie did in the Champions League. So that's got to count for something, surely.
No, not in mine. No, absolutely not. No. It's no. It doesn't. And until you look, you know when I'll start to take it seriously. 10 titles. Once you get to 10, now you're getting into the conversation of, okay, I'm that guy just within the Premier League context. I think it's difficult for people to understand that this man won 13 years. He was the best 13 years. Can you understand what it takes to refresh a squad? Because he had to refresh the squad, what, 4 or 5 times?
Yeah.
So there's also that.
Yeah, let's see how much longer, how many more years he's got. But I agree with you. I think the 10 is probably then, you know, maybe convince you and your mid-table side opinions. But I think you can't just count him completely. And as I said before, he's definitely got age on the side. He's definitely a wanted person. And his Man City, where he's going to stay for another, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. If that happens, who knows? Another 3, 4 league titles is very possible. Maybe a little upset next year with the Gunners coming through. And
No. The Gunners. I knew you were going to do that. No.
We'll go from there.
No, wait. No, I want to nip that in the bud. I'm not doing what you just did there. You thought you could slide that in there. The Gunners coming in next season. The Gunners coming in next season to do what?
To take the title. Okay, mark my words.
In England.
We'll mark this day in our diary, and you can buy me dinner.
I'll buy you dinner. He loves the finer things, by the way, this guy. He loves the finer things. So happy to buy you a high quality steak.
My choice and my of which restaurant in which country.
Okay. Now I knew I'd have to take a small mortgage out just to be able to actually be good on this deal. What are you up to this afternoon, Shaba? Before we let you go, you're playing some golf, big time golfer. This guy. Loves a bit. He's going to be watching. You're watching the ponies. You said you're putting some money down. Who you got?
Yeah, actually, the race is just right now, so I'm going to have to check it as soon as I jump off here. There was a young horse by the name of Stevie G running about 10 minutes ago down at Hollywood Bets Greyville. So I'll have to check the results once I jump off here. As you can see, my eyes are wandering. I was trying to check if the results have come up yet. But besides that, yeah, golf is always an option. Unfortunately, one needs to travel in the next 24, 48 hours. But it's a pity I'm not down there with you. Otherwise, definitely tomorrow morning, I would have been on the tee box at the fan court.
Yeah.
At the links. But
big time. Whoa. So not just a fan court. I like how you threw that in there. It's just an indicator for people that we don't all live the same. I would have been at fan court at the links. By the way, for those who don't know, there's three different courses. There's two courses where the lucky people get to play who can afford to go into fan court. But then there's the third one, the links, where you got to turn left. That's where Shaba and the big time, you know, the hoity-toities, you know when the youth are youthing, they say the ballers, the money makers, mureki, if you will. That's where they turn left and we're not allowed in.
Yeah, well, I'm not quite there. That's quite a cheeky jab, knowing very well that I'm a township boy. What's a Clemo then Dundu?
Now we switch it up. Now, okay.
There's no trust funds in this family or in this household, but surely if you kind of listen to my upcoming picks or trends that are out there, you too can make a bit of money to one day play at Frankfurt.
Love that. Let's end it off on that. That's called a teaser. That's big time. Listen, we're going to go to a little break. We're going to let Shaba go. Shaba, appreciate you, bugger. I hope you have a great day in whatever you're doing. I hope the ponies ran well, and I hope you make lots of money so you can buy me dinner when I see you again.
Excellent. Thanks, mate. We'll chat soon, and have a lovely day down in the beautiful part of the world.
Love
you. Maybe stop by Frankfurt and take the boys out for a cup of tea or something.
No, can't afford it. Can't afford it. Can't even afford tea. Can't even afford it. In fact, I don't live like Shaba. I can't even afford to look at it. Looking at Fan Court costs money. So I can't afford it. Don't even want to pretend to be that guy. You know those people who pretend like they're living that life with other people's money? No, not me. I'm what they call a working class hero. Go ahead, Shaba.
Just tell them, I'm your plug. Just tell them Sangoma sent you.
Oh, say no more. Say no more. On that note, the Sangoma sent me. This is the MKT show. See you in a bit. Welcome back, MKT Show. I'm MKT. This is the show with my name. Humble enough to name a whole show after myself. That's what you call humble. Real humble. Humble for real, real, as the kids say. Joined by a scientist, a runner, a coffee enthusiast, a granny jersey wearing maverick, Em Robertson.
It's good to be back.
Like the Terminator. Are you too young to have seen the Terminator?
Yeah.
The original Terminator with
the Connor. Original, yeah. But I feel like I know that.
There's
that
the line. Sarah Connor one, which isn't as good.
I feel like remakes are just never as good, eh?
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you like action films?
Yes.
Okay. But what kind of action films? Sorry, I don't consider like those Marvel nonsense things that you like.
No, I love good old building getting blown up, people, you know, running
Why
around.
Why do they put love stories in action films? Just be the John
drama.
Wick.
Yeah.
Like have the beginning, shoot the bad guy.
Yeah.
Then there's bosses. There's like three bosses and you get to the final boss, kill him, and then like bad dialogue and then you get out of it.
Yeah.
Roll credits. Half 90 minutes max as well.
Yeah, the whole James Bond, all the drama comes with the love story. I know.
Doing too much. Why is James Bond in love?
Yeah, we like focus, man.
Just shoot the guns.
Yeah, come on.
Anyway, listen. A bit of a trigger point. Good to have you back.
It's good to be here.
It's not just them, by the way. So I told a little, I told a tiny story yesterday. I was in Cape Town with a friend. I can't remember. Last year, this year, it's all a blur. And myself and this friend, Bryony McCormick, we both mentioned someone's name. And then we both carried on literally for about an hour and a half when we were at dinner. And by the way, keep in mind, we had a third friend there. But then her and I were just talking about this person and like, yo, remember when she did this? Yeah, and then I heard she did this. I honestly, I think we were making stuff up because we were such big fans of this person. And I'm not just saying that. Ladies and gentlemen, it is an absolute honor for me to introduce one of my heroes. And genuinely, I've argued for this woman as the toughest athlete South Africa has ever produced. When I just mean grit, forget about outcomes. But one of my favorite stories about her before I bring her on was she went to New Zealand. Essentially, they do two things, rugby and adventure racing. They do it in that order. I remember the first year she went and I read somewhere like, Robin, at the time she was, Robin Keim. So someone called Robin Keim had come second at the Coast to Coast. And I remember when I went on rugby tour in 2004 to New Zealand, I remember this Coast to Coast thing being like everywhere. So it is like, it is their thing. Then she came second. And then the next year she went back and she won. And I remember the response from there. Ladies and gentlemen, she also is multiple time doozy winner, like just... It was the Keim Invitational with her brother as junior winners. She's won the senior one as well twice. I mean, just somebody who I absolutely admire and love. And also, she's a mechanical engineer, by the way, with a master's. No big deal. An absolute honor to have the one Robin Owen. Robin, how's it going?
Hey, nice to be here and talk to you. I've been out of the sporting world as a whole for years now, actually. So it's kind of cool. This is a visit to the past, and nice to talk about.
How long has it
maybe
been?
Maybe who I used to be.
How long has it been?
I guess there was COVID beforehand, but it's now been 4 years since I was since I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I've got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. So I'm mostly mom now. Yeah. Occasionally go out for a run. I still like to visit the trails. Every now and again, I get to the top of a mountain. But, yeah, the racing Robin seems like something from a long time ago.
But that's quite interesting to me, you know, is more often than not, when people are brilliant at something, and I mean, you're like a super fit athlete, you know, is clearly when you went to, and we'll come back to coast, like when you won coast to coast, it's like, okay, this is creme de la creme athlete. You win that, like that puts you in a different echelon in the annals of history, you know, is how easy was it for you to just go, okay, cool, I've done what I want to do, I'm just going to become a mom. Like, for an elite athlete, when you're the best in the world at what you do, very few of us are that. How easy was that decision for you to just go, okay, cool, I'm going to be a mom now, that's enough for me? Have you always been that kind of person?
I guess I've, like, my athletic career, if you can call it that, has always been quite evolving. I kind of was a paddler, and then I was a runner, and then I was an adventure racer, and yeah, so I keep moving on to the next interesting thing. And time-wise, I think this is a question that I've thought about, and I guess a number of different people ask. And I think the timing was also, like, I had an injury. I tore some ligaments in my ankle, and then after that there was COVID, and then during the COVID time I was, fell pregnant and became so. It wasn't a decision to now retire and become a mom. It kind of like happened organically with things going on. But I can say I love being a mom. And, it kind of feels like a bit of a past life now. I think maybe I'll want it back sometime. But being a mom and having immersing yourself in a whole different world is it's fun in the same way, and it's actually challenging in quite a similar way to. Feel like adventure racing was maybe good training for being a mom.
I was going to ask you, like, what's harder, 500 to 800 kilometers of like an hour of sleep a night for 2 weeks, or being a mother?
Well, I'm only 3 years into this journey, but the adventure race was 2 weeks, and now I'm 3 years in, so I don't think I can answer the question quite yet, but it doesn't end.
Yeah, hey, good point. You know, Robin, I'm not the smartest guy. I do not have kids, but I tell people should stop saying I'm having kids.
Maybe you're smart. Yeah.
What's that?
So maybe it is a smart move.
No, not to have the kids. But I also say, you're not having kids. You're having people. They last forever. I think people don't think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. You think about, certainly as like a athlete, as a female athlete, you think about the 9 months of pregnancy as your, like, if you're thinking about where you're going to fit this having kids into your career, and you think about it as nine months, but that's not even, that's just the prelude.
Yeah.
The rest of, I guess, like, after 9 months, a lot of women do, you can get it. You can go back and you can make the, make your life as it was before, your priority, and somehow fit kids in there. A lot of people do it. For me, it's, certainly at this phase of life with the little ones, they've taken a centerpiece in my life for the moment.
Man, I love that. I remember.
Yeah, it's
a big thing. Hey?
Maybe it's what you put in, but it's definitely, it's not easy for me.
Yeah, no, look, I can't imagine. But I remember meeting you, and, you know, sport and working on the media side of it. Sometimes you just view people as like, okay, elite athletes. I'm over here. I'm just telling their story. And I remember meeting you, I can't remember however many years ago, but it was like, usually it's like, you know, I work at a lot of the events, and there's a lot of chit-chatting, you know, just general chit-chat. And I remember seeing you, and I'm like, oh, how come that person isn't like chasing the cameras? And I remember asking people, like, you know, the athletes are doing this, but I was like, who's that? And people were like, what do you mean you don't know who that is, you know? What's it been like for you transitioning, like, from, you're obviously a precocious talent with the way Doozy went, and you obviously won the juniors, and you were a legend in that world. And as you say, you transitioned and you seem to quite quickly be at the top. Is that because you and your brother were competitive? Is your family competitive? Like, how did you become this, like, world-class competitive person?
I don't know. I think it's also the so the sports are pretty it's all been pretty niche sports, but the doozy, yeah, there's the paddling and with the doozies kind of running as well. So that running with a boat on your shoulder makes you strong for running. And those are the main kind of running and paddling is the main things I'm good at. I've like learned to ride a bike okay enough to get by in the multi-sport things. But I guess the paddling and certainly the background of the KZN paddling and the doozy, it requires a lot of running as well. So those two, in that setting, those two skills go together. Mm. So they just kind of built at the same time. And I think I had a lot of opportunities at school to, as a youngster, be able to kind of trusted to take this very unstable boat that's likely to break into pieces down a river. That gives you a lot of confidence as a teenage girl. And yeah, it's maybe a lot of people wouldn't say it's such a sensible thing to allow a kid to do that. But yeah, I'm glad I think I took a lot from that experience and that trust and confidence. Yeah, as an athlete in the adventure racing world, it's that was sort of like what set me up.
Wow. And that's interesting to me. So forgive me if I'm wrong here, but it sounds like your parents treated you like they would have treated your brother, I believe, Lance. It's just like, oh, no, well, you're a part of this family. Here's a boat. All the best out there. So that they kind of gave you that roughshod treatment of, hey, get involved, get stuck in. You know, just because you're a little girl, it doesn't mean we're going to treat you any different. You're a person. Be tough.
Yeah, there was definitely. And it was also the school and the environment. It's kind of the culture of the place. Pietermaritzburg is it's the home of the comrades. It's the home of the doozy. It's the mid-mile kind of, the culture of the place is very outdoorsy, very athletic. And it was at school, so it wasn't really my parents pushing you out to go do this. It was more like at school, it was one of the things you could choose to do. And I was like, when I said I wanted to do that, my parents didn't say no.
I love that. And because it leads me to the next thing, right, is I think you were sort of in the middle of early the transition to women doing tough things and kind of people not kind of really pushing against it. I think you might have been part of the sort of second evolution. I kind of remember at the beginning, just before I think our generation, that those ladies would have struggled and they sort of blazed the path for you. But for me, seeing you doing difficult things, it was often sort of in the patriarchal sense, like, no, don't let the girls do difficult things. They can't do that. They'll break, you know, sort of that, almost that attitude. I mean, I don't know if you felt that when you were coming in or was having that support from a young age, you were just like, hey, I'm used to doing this. Or did you ever feel that girls were kind of pushed to the side and protected and this is a man's world?
Yeah, not really. I feel like I was, kind of the generation behind the road makers. There was, yeah, kind of 10, 20 years before me, there were the women who weren't allowed to do the doozy and they were kind of had to fight to be allowed to get in. And that had been done. The road had been paved. I was always, as a girl doing these kind of things, there was always a lot fewer women than men. But the messaging that I got from my parents and from the people around me, the sort of school I went to particularly, I think a lot of schools in that area, I went to Epworth, and that they were very encouraging. And the messaging was always there's no reason why you can't do anything different to a man as a girl. And so, yeah, if anything, there's the messaging around, like, you're kind of at a bit of a disadvantage being a woman in a man's world, but I never agreed with that messaging, really, I think.
No, you didn't. Yeah, you beat most of them.
I'm glad I'm a girl. I'm a woman. And I think I've had more opportunities than I might have otherwise had for
Listen, being female. It is soul-crushing as a man today when women are faster than me. And I don't want to be the PC guy. I'm telling you. So I remember you like, oh, no, she's on the podium. Like, oh, no. That is so soul-crushing. Like, oh, my God, there's nothing we can do. That is a human beast over there. I want to ask something on the male-female thing. You and your brother, obviously he's a proper doozy guy himself. Are you competitive or was it kind of like urge each other on? Because I've got a sibling and it makes me sick if I lose at anything to her.
I'm the older one. So I was the big sister.
Yep.
And there's only 18 months between us. So I guess also like the fact that being a boy and a girl, it was there was for a certain amount of time, like I had the upper hand in any sibling rivalry or competitions. But yeah, there came a point, I can't remember exactly when it was, probably when maybe I was 16, Alliance was 14 or something, when he just overtook me, and it was kind of a seamless thing. It wasn't there wasn't too long where it was actually really a tight match. Yeah, I think like probably as a youngster and in certain things, our whole family is quite competitive. We play board games competitively, but yeah, in terms of the athletic competitiveness, once Lance Bocci just kind of came past me smoothly, and there wasn't too much time for real conflict in the middle.
I got you. And listen, I've got Em here. I presume she has some questions for you. Just so people know what was happening off screen. People think, like, I'm not a good person, by the way. Like a lot of people confuse me with a good... So Em obviously has heard of Robin, who hasn't, in our world. And she was trying to network to get to meet Robin. I'm like, no, Robin's my hero. I'm going to talk to her. So Em, do you have any questions where you were trying to network off our podcast? Unbelievable. Do you have any questions for the legend that is Robin? No.
Shameless plug. I mean, I have a lot of questions for Robin, but I think one of my main ones, well, I feel like paddlers always make really good runners. So I also grew up in KZN, and like every paddler that I know is like quite a good runner. And I honestly think what you said earlier, Robin, is because they're used to running with a massive boat on their shoulders at like 4.5 minutes a K. Then you take the boat off and then they run even faster. Where did you find trail running? I think, like, when did that bug bite? At what stage did you decide, okay, I'm going to ditch the boat because it's slowing me down?
It was probably moving to, I think you mentioned now that you also actually live in Yonkers Hook, but it was basically being in Stellenbosch. It's the growing up in Pietermaritzburg, you say you also come from there. To me, the rivers are more exciting than the trails, sort of. Immediately around. The Drakensberg is amazing, but I guess I'm a big mountain person, and I like the big mountains, and I like the exciting, like, wild rivers. So coming to the Cape, being in Stellenbosch, you've got to drive through town to get to a little dam where you paddle about 10 laps around to do an hour of paddling. So you can do that, or you can just like put on your shoe and head straight up into the mountain. So
I love that.
When you've not got a lot of time, it's the thing that makes more sense to do. And I guess the first, like, really getting into trail running, my now husband boyfriend at the time had got, I think it was Born to Run was the book. He Class. Got off a friend, and then I read it, and we kind of got, it was a bug that bit for a while, and we were those people trying to, I could never run before, and suddenly we're taking our shoes off and going to run over a mountain in the weekend.
Nice. Are you guys still?
It took a little bit far for a little while.
Are you guys still minimalist shoe fans?
Yeah, to some degree. I'm not. I think there's good luck, slightly more to the middle ground. But I think there's value in having a strong foot. That doesn't mean that there's never value in having foot protection, but.
So
I think that was the, like, he got excited about it. I got excited about it. My brother then was excited about it at the same time. And yeah, a lot of us made the transition it was a gradual transition. I didn't immediately stop the paddling, but that was the first time. As a paddler, you do training runs of like up to 10Ks, and you don't really try to go much further. But the mountains and the trail running, it was kind of a complete, like, I'd always enjoyed hiking. And now this idea that you can actually do what you would do on a 5-day hike in a morning was kind of a mind-blowing thing.
Not everyone could do it in a morning, but I mean, no, it's Robin. No.
Sorry, Robin, just some breaking news to you there. Not everyone can do that, sorry. Like, I know in your mind, because let's not do what you just did there, just so you realize. And for me, Robin, in case you haven't heard, breaking news, I'm also the most humble person I know. People have said, I'm not saying this, I'm just reporting that people have said, my biggest weakness is I'm too humble, I'm too caring, I'm too passionate. I'm the most humble person people know, by the way. So I know when I see a humble person like you, not everyone can do that. I can't believe you just said, Oh, what, you run 42 kilometers in a... Because I know she's talking about. Yeah, yeah, I'll do it in the morning. Robin, not everybody's actually a freak athlete, just so you know that. But you know what my favorite part about you is? And I want to finish off on this. Robin, I'm trying to grow as a human being. So two things I picked up as you were saying that is your husband, by the way, shout out to him for having the ego to go, not only is my wife definitely a better athlete than me, because as men, obviously, that's like a big thing for us to overcome. So he's already a legend for like, oh, no, wait, instead of hating on this woman, I'm going to marry her. Incredible, incredible foresight for his mind. He's like, yeah, I'm going to make her my girlfriend and then we're going to marry a legend. That's my favorite part. But the second part is that you've got a master's in mechanical engineering, right? And so you aren't just some athlete, and athletes often are just, well, not often, but sometimes they can, you know, be all athlete and nothing upstairs. I'd also like to quickly touch on your academic endeavor. And was that personal? Was it family that always said, hey, you can't be a dum-dum and just do athletics? That ends. How did you take on something? And it's not like you've done like a BA marketing degree or whatever people drop out into. You've gone masters in mechanical engineering. Well, where did that come from?
It's actually civil engineering.
Sorry.
No, I think that's one step. I think that's probably one step below mechanical engineering. my husband's a mechanical engineer.
He's like, I had to have something.
Yeah, no. But I see what you've done there. You've given him a leg up. But actually, we know you're smarter. But we won't tell him that. You know, he won't watch us anymore.
She's just humble.
Yeah. Too humble.
I guess it was. I don't know why. I've thought recently about like why engineering, why civil engineering. I don't really know.
Really? That's unbelievable.
It's cool when you're good at maths and science, like they say, engineering's a good option. But I've enjoyed it all along. I've enjoyed the studying. I'm now actually back at the university. I'm registered for a PhD. I'll hopefully get it in less than 10 years or something.
Oh, yeah, no, of course Robin Owen is, of course you're doing a PhD. By the way, Em's doing a PhD, but of course you're doing a PhD. Like
legend.
Like, I can't believe I even said master's without asking about the, but in your mind, so I guess when you're this level, you're just like, oh, okay, a doctorate, yeah. No, why wouldn't I? I'm Robin Owen. I can leave it. That is amazing. So when does that journey start? And I tell you why I love this before you answer. And Robin, you've been incredible. And thanks so much for joining us. Is I wanted to get your take as to, for me, I love that women have different heroes to just like somebody shaking their booty on a hip hop video or Kim Kardashian or, you know, like entertainers like mugs like me who just talk for a living on camera and want attention. Like the academic thing for me, I love that my little nieces and you know, those kinds of people can have different heroes, and you're taking it to this level. So for you, I don't know if that means anything. I mean, I don't want to plaster you up there as like a hero, but I love that you are acknowledging that side of yourself. Just your thought as a woman also, I mean, engineering often a male space as well. Just your thought as a trailblazer in that, is that important to you that young girls can see you as well headed that direction so they can have new heroes?
I guess I also, in that regard, kind of don't really consider myself. I think the trailblazers came a bit before me. I think the trails were already kind of blazed for me. It wasn't I was still kind of within the minority, but it wasn't very unusual that a girl was studying engineering. There's been 10 years where I've not been at the university, and in that, even the staff, now the civil engineering staff are quite female. I'm not sure exactly what the split is, but it's not an old white man's game completely anymore there.
Yeah.
So yeah, so things are changing. I don't really consider, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it means it is accessible to people. And if more girls want to be engineers, then great. Like, it's good that there's an option there. Don't necessarily think it's like the best choice for everyone, but it's not a gender doesn't really come into the mix too much.
I love that. Robin, before I let you go, would you ever like hang out for a coffee yet? I mean, it is one of my dreams to just like, I've always like, wow, I wonder what Robin, what does Robin Owen do? Like, what are you up to on a Saturday morning? Do you just eat croissants like the rest of us? I've always wondered.
I love croissants.
Oh, okay. So we've got something in common. Like, if I come to Stellenbosch, I'm gonna get a hold of you. It has been one of my dreams to actually meet you in the outside of the race setting, because I know and love is sport, and you are one of my sporting heroes. I'm unapologetic about that. You know, keep inspiring, man. And thanks so much for taking the time to take time away from your kids and your family and your dogs who we heard barking. What kind of dogs you got, by the way?
They, it's anyone's guess. I don't know if I should point the screen that way.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, let's see them.
We can open it up to a vote.
Yeah.
They've disappeared.
Oh, they disappeared right on cue.
They're mixtures.
Yeah, no, cool. Listen, great to have you on. And if I'm in Stellenbosch, I would love to link up. I mean, Em will probably tag along, because as you've heard, she's trying to network to meet you outside of the show. It's absolutely unbelievable. Just using our platform to meet Robin Owen. Robin, I appreciate you, man. Keep doing great things, because, you know, it has been said that if we can see further as human beings, and because we stand on the shoulders of giants, and I see you certainly as a South African giant, but also your humility always. Like, I'm the opposite. You know, in the Dunning-Kruger effect, I'm high ego down here, but you're such a proficient person and somebody who I've looked to, and I've said, you know what, that is the way to do it. Less talk, more action. And I really, really appreciate you for that. And thanks for taking the time, and all the best with number one family, but the PhD, and please keep me posted, because academia is life as well. So thanks so much.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Yeah. Robin Owen, the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Good luck there with the mutt.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
And
just before we go, a little teaser. Are you ever going to be back? Are you done?
Yeah, I'd probably.
Okay, we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Not within the next year or two, but probably.
We'll leave it at that. That's not a yes for anyone out there. So Robin hasn't committed. She said probably. You know, people, social media clip things up out of context. Are you going to be back? Robin Owen says probably. I love it. Robin, take it easy. Thanks so much, and have a great day.
Cheers. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers.
Bye.
Yeah, the real deal. Hey, Em.
People need to watch out. If she says probably and she makes a comeback, I'm like...
Oh, but of course she's doing a PhD.
I know. I'm just like... I love her thing. She's like, oh, a 5-day hike, one... You can do it in the morning. I was just like...
No.
That's... Yeah.
That's you.
That's you.
Yeah. Robin, that's you and like maybe 1,000 people in the whole world.
Yeah. That's like when... Have you ever been for... Like when a super fit friend is like, hey, like we should go for a run together. And then you're like, oh, yeah, cool. Like, oh, shake out. The easy run.
Yeah.
And then you run like your 10K PB. Like I feel like exercising with her would be like that. You know?
Yeah.
It's like invite, like, oh, let's just do a chilled. And then it's like...
Yeah, it'll be a morning hike. It'll be fine. And then six hours later.
Yeah. And then you've done like this 5-day thing, and you're just like, I'm never going to walk again.
But a lot of people might see her and think, oh, no, that's, she's being humble. But that's Robin all the time. Like, oh, I'm winning races, and I'm not talking about it. I'm going home to my family.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's really,
and then I'm
cool
doing a PhD, and then, but in the Dunning-Kruger sense, she is the epitome of, you know, because Dunning-Kruger, often people only take the one way, but it works the other way as well. High achievers often underrate their own performance, whereas high ego people who aren't actually about that action often overrate, right? It's a psychological thing. So, but she's just like, no, I'm winning races, then I'm going home. I don't need an Instagram page.
And what's so crazy, I think the culture she grew up in, that like Peter Maritzburg's sporty culture.
Yeah.
So like winning the doozy is a huge deal.
Massive deal.
But everyone is so, it's not that they don't care. I think everyone is just so good at stuff and like sport that they're just like, oh, cool. Like, yeah, you won the doozy too. Great. Yeah. And then, like, if you had to come from the outside in, it's like the shattered glass effect. You're like, what do you mean? She won, like, hello.
Twice?
Yeah. No, unreal.
And as a junior, she won it.
I know.
And her brother, like, won it a couple of times as a junior.
Yeah, no. They're, like, a famous, like, sporting family.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's great.
I love that. But I love that she's just like, oh, no, I'm having kids.
So another thing, when she's like, oh, I like to like get out for a run every now and again, like getting out for a run, she'll do something that like people will have to train for.
Yeah.
So like she'll run to her beau or like Franschhoek or whatever. Yeah. And it's from her house. And it's like some people will have to train to
just do
that. But
give us some context. You know, like how far would that be and how much climbing will she be doing?
So actually a good example of I think a normal morning out, you asked what she does on a Saturday. This was maybe pre-kids, but... So the valley that we live in, Yonkersuk Valley, there's a famous route called the Hoefijster, where you run, it's all the you run like from Botmaskop to Stellenbosch Mountain, but you tagging like all, not quite tagging the peaks, but running the ridge line of the mountains that are in that area. Super, or running is a strong word, scrambling, intense. It's only 45 Ks or so, but like 4,000 meters of elevation, really intense kind of technical stuff. Most people, if you do it in like, I don't know, 16, 17 hours, that's like a strong run. Like a 14-hour Hoefijster is decent, just to give you a thing.
Yeah.
She held the record, her and her husband, for a long time in about 8 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, there's only, I think she still got the women's record, but the guys who took it from her, and it's bounced, Ryan Sands had it, then Kane was involved. So like, listen to the names, and now she's in the mix.
Yeah.
Landi Kreling had it for a while, I think, Christian as well.
Yeah.
But 8 hours 20 is like unreal. And I think the guys who took it from her were Johan van Heerden, Daniel Klaassen, and Kyle Herring.
Yeah, so for context, so like, those are like elite trail running, like so, monsters. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what it takes. Do you know what I mean? So like what she does in the morning, and to do it in 8 hours, she's like twice as fast as most decent athletes. So like if a normal person had to go and do it, I don't even know.
But I think that's the magic about someone like that, is that she's just doing her thing.
Yeah.
And then she leaves you wondering. You know, sometimes in this world today is we've got too much access. And then it's like, I'm not left wondering. But with her, I do genuinely. And she genuinely, since I met her, like, oh, this person's one of my heroes. Like, how do I get that hectic? My thing, I've always thought, that lady's so hectic. She is so, like when she won Coast to Coast, like we didn't really get into it, but she won Coast to Coast. That in New Zealand is the thing.
It's like the pinnacle, All Blacks. Yeah.
It is. And then she came second the 1 year, and then the next year she went and won it, and then she just stopped. Like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like,
it's crazy. And that she's not like documenting every single second. I've got nothing against people who want to do that. It makes my job when I have to stalk them for information easier. Yes, but I like gave her a quick Google this morning to try and find her who faced the time, couldn't. And like everything I could find was written about her from like trail running magazines or sports stuff and whatever, but nowhere was there Instagram posts, anything of being like, I did this thing, you know?
Like the Robin with the, you know, often they'll do that cheap, like inspirational music in the background with the classic filter.
Yeah.
There's none of that with Robin.
No.
Like I'm just smashing everyone.
There's a slow-mo running video of me. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, you know who did the work here? Her husband. Because he spotted it early.
Yeah.
Like the stuff, you know, because Robin's not rah-rah. He went, I think, long, no, what's his name again? Michael.
Michael.
I think Michael went, oh, no, wait, that's what serious looks like. I know where this is headed.
Yeah.
And let me get, she must be my girlfriend early before she wins everything around the world, because then the competition comes
stuck
on.
With me, yeah.
He's like, oh, doozy champion. She was like 19 when she won the women's one.
Yeah, that's wild.
So he probably saw it then and went, I need to do everything in my power to date this woman immediately.
Yeah.
Because I can see exactly where this is going. She's going to have a PhD.
Probably have to train to date her.
Yes.
Because you know? Date night probably looks like, let's just run up and down Stellenbosch Mountain.
Well, if you can't paddle, how are you going to hang out with me? Why would that be attractive to Robin?
Yeah, it's like, let's keep up.
Yeah, if you're not an athlete, what are you doing near me? This isn't going to work.
Yeah.
How am I going to reproduce with someone who's a loser?
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That's so hectic. Good for him.
Yeah, good for him, man.
Oh, I'm happy for him.
Am I also the kids? Probably super athletes in the making, let's
X-Men.
Be real.
Yeah. X-Men. But, no, X-Men. Because also parents, also mechanical civil engineer, so not dum-dums.
Yeah, no, they're going to be next level.
Did you hear her say, when you're good at maths and science, not everybody's good?
I know.
It was just so casual.
Oh, my maths marks were shocking at school, so I'm just like, she's one of those. She's just like...
My marks were so bad, I nearly got kicked out of school. I had to negotiate with my headmaster.
I love that.
You had to have a C average at the school I went to.
Oh, yeah?
And I was... Let's just say I was bubbling on the, I was bubbling on the limit.
So the negotiating skills came early.
Well, my parents lived overseas at the time. They were, and my dad's not really a negotiate with kids guy. I didn't really, the headmaster was the least of my problems.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah, oh, wow.
If
okay.
I got kicked out of there, I'm having a conversation with a guy who, no.
Okay, so you were like, I need to stay, yeah.
I don't know if you heard the youth say, I didn't want that smoke.
I didn't want that smoke. I didn't want that smoke.
All right, Em, we're going to chop it up. You're going to hang around for another 20 minutes or so. Em's going to be with us for a little bit, and we'll chop it up. It's the MKT Show. The MKT Show in George. We are at the Mutt, the Mountain Ultra Trail, proudly presented by UTMB, Ultra Mont Blanc. Plenty to come on that. If you haven't watched the last few episodes, we had Zane on. He's the race director. We had Rebecca Kuhner on, the second best, by the way. Also, a little bit of granny vibes. We'll come back to that mix with Rebecca Kuhner. Isabella, her sister, who bench presses more than her. So it's tough to say which the best Kuhner daughter is. We had Robin Owen just now, hero of mine. Still got M. Robertson. Our friendship is developing. We're still acquaintances though.
Yeah.
And don't you forget that.
Yeah. I feel like I need to seal the deal and bring a coffee. I feel like that's... Can you be bored though?
But that's tricky because I'm not going to be nice to you if the coffee's rubbish.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Are you a gift person? I want to...
Yeah, I love giving gifts. Oh, I don't like receiving them. Because I get really awkward. I'm just like, thanks.
Can I give you my take on gifts?
Yeah.
When you give me a gift, I hate gifts. I tell all my friends, don't give me a gift. Because I'm middle class. I have all the things I need. What are you going to buy me that I don't have?
What about an experience?
Like what? I've done everything.
Have you done everything?
Not everything. I've done some cool stuff. But
yeah.
Like, what's an experience? Give me an example. I'm glad you went.
So, Blowcrantz bungee jump.
No. I've done lots of bungee jumping. I've got what a story about, for you.
So it's like gift of time. So it's like, it's an activity you're going to do together.
Like lunch.
Like lunch, but like maybe something like, you know, what is that thing that all Cape Townians do? Clay cafe. We're going to go paint some pottery.
Oh my goodness gracious. Okay.
But it's more about hanging out than the pottery.
No, I like that. I like lunch, like time together. Yeah. I see that. I always say as a gift, save the money, whatever.
I hear you.
In fact, here's what I say. Because here's my thing about gifts. Shall I give you my theory?
Yeah.
And by the way, I want your organic response. Because some people, there are strong responses to this.
Okay.
When I buy a gift, I want to be able to say, if you buy me a gift, I want to be able to say to you, I hate this gift. And you shouldn't be offended by that. You know why? Is the gift for me or for you? If the gift is for me, why are you upset that I hate the gift? Because you should go, oh, this person doesn't like it. Why can't I say that without people becoming sensitive?
I feel like then your friends feel like they don't know you well. It's like, man, I thought that he would love this and I messed up.
Why do people do that? Just ask me what I like. Yeah. It's called money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But just give me money. The money.
I don't have anything against that.
But why don't people, like, I'm 38 years old. I know what I like. Why are you trying to find a little piece that's just ours in the world?
Yeah.
Just give me the money.
Yeah.
No. But do I sound crazy? Because no. some people say, I'm nuts.
I'm the worst with this. Oh, I wrap my... No, I'll tell my family, like, because I don't like stuff. Minimalism, like, yeah, try to live with very little things.
Oh,
so I'm like, unique.
So progressive. Oh, my, you're your own person.
But it's like, if you give me something random that's going to like sit in my house and not really have a use, I'm just like, I don't like wrapping paper and stuff. I'm like, use newspaper, don't add to like landfills, you know, the whole thing. So if I need something, I'll tell like my parents, for example, I'll be like, okay, I need this thing. I'll even like buy my own gift from them and then pretend to be surprised on Christmas Day. So like, I love giving gifts.
Yeah.
But I'm like receiving them. I feel like I'm similar to you. I'm just like, yeah, I don't want stuff that I don't need.
I have what I need. Don't worry about it. You cannot buy me. There is nothing you can buy me. Don't worry about it. But people get so sensitive about that. Like, yeah. Oh, I love, but gift it's a love language. I'm like, get out of my face with that dumb book. Have you read it?
I have.
Of course you have. You're in Cape Town. And then everyone goes there, yeah, but it's my love language. I don't care. Like, yeah, you know what my love language is? Give me the money.
Give me the money.
Because I know what I like.
But then what are you going to spend your money on?
Well, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's for me. Don't. If is the gift for me or for you? No, why do you need to worry where my money is going?
Yeah, I think it's more like you want to try and anticipate what you're going to get and be like, oh, you didn't have to go through the trouble. I got you the thing.
Well, what, you as a person?
Not me as a person, but like people when they give gifts.
The giver, yeah.
That's, I think, the whole...
Because that's what it becomes. So my final theory on that is gifts are often about the giver, yeah, and not the person receiving it. Because like you say, they want to be the person who goes, oh, I know a little part of you that no one else does. And I've... Don't be a bum. Just give me the money. Sorry, I'm getting a bit emotional here.
No, it's fine.
Because it's between me and my mother. She can't get over this thing of like... Don't, you know what? Firstly, Mom, you've worked so hard to give me a life I could never have imagined. So you've already given me the... See, but in my mom's mind, she can't understand when I say, stop buying me stuff. Like, I don't need anything from you. You're old.
You're old.
Go and enjoy your life. You're a very old person who's worked... My mother's worked mercilessly. She's still a workaholic.
Yeah.
Stop giving me stuff. Oh, no. But you just... I don't need it. I don't, like, just listen to me. I don't.
She's like, I'm your mother. I know best. Here's a gift.
Drives me insane. Drives me. And I've got another friend. I don't want to be sexist, but it's a woman. And she does the same. And with her, I can be a little bit verbally aggressive.
Oh, yeah.
Because we grew up together. Our fathers worked together. And I, like, it's just a nightmare. I feel like this has been a therapy session.
Yeah, it's good. For me. You need to get it out, man.
Stop giving gifts.
So everybody, don't give gifts.
Or money.
Or give money.
Yeah. Give me the money.
Bank account details in... No.
Perfect. No, I'm serious. Hey, here's my bank account details.
Let's go.
Drop the cash. Ideally, cold hard cash, you know what I mean? Yeah. Although, who still uses cash? Anyway, a different subject. We're at the Mutt. I like your reference to Robin of we all live together. We live in the same place, by the way. If you didn't catch it on the podcast. So we talked to one of my heroes, Robin Owen. Are you angling for like a friendship there with like Robin Owen?
I feel like I don't know if I would keep up with her to be a friend. Just she's someone who I've heard a lot about. She's like a household name, I think. Paddling, doozy. Yeah, she's a legend. And it's one of those things where I'm like, how much of a stalker can I actually be? I'm not going to go knock on her door just because we live in the same place and be like, hi, do you want to talk to me? But, you know, waiting for that organic meet moment. But I feel like I would have a lot to ask her, whether she would be stoked about it. I don't know. But in the sports world, I mean, if I had to bump into her, I would definitely have a lot to ask.
Well, you got a podcast, Trail Culture. Let's see if we can get on your podcast. Yeah. Trail Culture, tell us about it. Some people may know about it. Some people don't know about it. If you don't know about it, go and listen to it. There's also coaching, like, or get into it. Trail Culture, start of the pod. Where are we? I know you're recording this morning.
Yeah, so Trail Culture started last year. I don't actually know. It was like 7 months ago. Basically, wanting to bridge the gap, the science world, the sports world. I also think that there's a lot of great European and American podcasts that I was always listening to. And I was like, we have the same standard of coach, athlete, researcher in South Africa. Mm-hmm. Why is nobody talking to them?
Got you.
I think there's a lot of adventure stuff out there, which is cool. But I was like, I'm going to try something slightly different. So jumped into it and did just that. We're here at Mutt by UTMB. And you've kindly kind of brought me into what you're doing, mm-hmm, as well. And I'm learning more. I'm listening to your stuff about soccer and rugby, so I'm like getting more into that side of things.
Yeah.
But I'm just like a shameless running nerd.
Awesome.
Track, cross country, road, whatever it is, trail running, I'm there for it. This morning we were recording. We have some of the Live Village, the Live to Run team is here. So really great chatting to them. Lindy, the team manager and the founder, is actually here. She traveled with the team. They're busy doing a shakeout run now. They're all competing, the elite team, in the 45K. Mm-hmm. They are stoked, and it was really good to hear like a bit about the training, what they've been up to, interview them. So, yeah, that's what's going to be going out, hopefully, just now.
Yeah, no. So Trail Culture, wherever you get your podcasts, it's on, this one's not going to be on YouTube, I think, just audio on.
Yeah, just audio.
Okay,
on this,
but
one, yeah.
Available on, subscribe to the channel, yeah. Don't subscribe, audio, everything. Don't subscribe, it's awesome. But then there's a coaching side to your life as well.
There is,
And I thought yesterday, as I was thinking, I was going through your website, and I thought, one thing I'd love to get into and hear is, How many athletes do you coach at the moment? Do you have a stable, or how does it work?
So it fluctuates, but I think the one thing I do have is a cap on the amount of people I've got. I think so at the moment I've got 18.
18?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
So that's a lot of people's calendars to keep in your mind. And obviously I've recently, the PhDs come on board, so I know how much time it takes me personally. Some people can coach more, some people less. I know how many hours in a week I've got and what each athlete takes or needs from me. So I wouldn't go much higher than that at this stage. So
men, women, what's the composition?
Total mix. Okay. My youngest athlete at this stage, I mean, I've coached some youngsters before cross country, but right now 19. Oldest athlete, I'm like, is it my dad? 62.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's running the mat on Sunday. I'm very proud. Yeah. I'm one of those kids who just talks about her parents a lot.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, my dad's my hero.
Oh,
so
that's amazing.
He got me into the whole running scene. He's like a classic KZN comrades dude, and mm-hmm. paddling, the whole shebang. He did it all.
What's his name?
Ian.
Ian.
Yeah, Robertson. That's mm-hmm. him. So you guys can check him out. 25K, yeah. He's coming for it. The coaching side, yeah, range of athletes, range of goals. So some at a high level. I've got a couple who are hoping to do well this weekend. And then I've also got, you know, athletes who, for whatever reason, they've been out of the sport for a while, or they've never run, and they're like, will you help me run my first 5K?
Love that side as well.
So I really dig the high performance stuff. I was super into that, but I also really just enjoy... Yeah, everyone's got a story, and you just kind of walk that road with them, and I really enjoy that, yeah.
So who's your athletes this weekend, so people can look out for them and know that the trail culture is the coach?
Yeah, so I've Skitter Fenter is one of them. He's mm-hmm. going to be doing the 60K.
Great Afrikaans name. That.
Great Afrikaans
you cannot
name.
Mistake that. Skitter Fenter.
That's it.
Oh, my
yeah.
goodness. Fantastic.
Legend.
Great trailers as well.
Great, and he's just, yeah, great, exactly. Great so trailers. Him and his wife have done a couple of, like, adventure race stuff, and mm-hmm. their team name is always the Fenter Vankies, so it's very cute.
What does that mean? Translate for
yeah, me. So that's the Fenter trailers.
Yes.
It's really funny. It's a bit of a niche
it's
thing.
It's South African. You got to know. Fenter's a big time trailer. That's great. LOL.
LOL.
As the kids say. Yeah.
So they're doing that. Skitter's doing the 60K. My dad's coming. I coach him. My brother-in-law is going to be here.
Okay.
He missed, unfortunately, the 25K entries. That's kind of his thing, his distance. But he's going to be on the 10K. He's extremely fast for how little he trains. It really frustrates me. But love him to bits. My sister's going to be doing her first 10K.
Amazing.
So yeah, getting the whole family involved.
Nice.
And then I've got Erica Raspis from Durbanville. She's going to be doing the marathon. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of people, marathon 60K. No, most of the longer distance stuff happened at UTD. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's a little bit too close, hard to choose your races. So yeah, we've got some 60K and unders to look out for.
Are you searching for the most Afrikaans names to coach? I mean, there's nothing wrong with being Afrikaans. I'm just saying, who was the lady?
Erica Erasmus.
So it's Erica, but it's Erica because she's Afrikaans.
Yeah.
Erica Erasmus.
How is your Afrikaans?
Uitstekend.
Uitstekend.
My Afrikaans is wonderlijk.
I love it. I'm like, yeah.
Well, why wouldn't you? I'm that guy.
No, I'm like, you're good at everything, and you're humble. So you wouldn't tell me that you were good at it.
I am.
So I have to ask you.
I am very humble. I'm humble enough to admit I'm not good at everything. I'm good at a lot of things, but not everything. I mean, let's be realistic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My Afrikaans, yeah.
But yeah, good for you.
Body tall.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah,
guys. I'm trying to think who's my most English athlete. Oh, it's probably my dad.
Well, that's hilarious that you have to think about it. You clearly are just are you going on a filter? Like, okay, unclick. You know, on those filters where you can click Afrikaans names.
Yeah.
You're going core Afrikaans.
Yeah, because there's a difference. There's a difference. Like, I'm in a very Afrikaans community.
Yes.
And I learned by default, so I can actually speak it, which is funny because I didn't grow up speaking it. And then when I think my folks, when they watch me, they're like, what? Like, she can speak Afrikaans? This is weird. But I'm like fake Afrikaans. You know what I mean? Like,
I do know what you mean. There's a big difference between Boere Mense and Afrikaans people. The yuppie ones who start to mix with the English people.
Yes. No. Then English people who speak Afrikaans is also a different category. And then English people who think they speak Afrikaans.
Yes.
That's like a whole...
Terrible. Sore in the ears.
Yeah.
You know what it is with Afrikaans people mixing with, like, English people that I have a problem with is the Springboks are quite good. I don't really like the Afrikaans genes being diluted. because we're going to produce weaker rugby players. We got to be able to call it out at some stage. Yeah. That those whatever those Boro Oaks are up to on the farms,
keep them strong.
No, yeah. Like keep them doing that.
Yeah.
I want to keep winning William Webb Ellis's. You know what I mean? Obviously, yes. Tulsa guys, as you know, Tulsa. Tulsa captain, yeah. Siya Kalisi, maybe you've heard of him.
Yeah.
Tulsa guy, Lukanya, you know, Mapimpi, Tulsa's.
They're also doing something right. We need to keep it.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, no. With Tulsa's, just keep it Tulsa. Don't worry about it. You don't need to elaborate on that. As I said, I was saying to Shaba earlier, he's a knockoff Zulu, or Zulu's the knockoff of Tulsa, as you know. But anyway, I don't want to go on about the truth. Listen, Matt, this week, who are you excited about? Because the elites are here. We'll look out for those athletes. Trail culture on social media. Yeah. So we'll look out for your guys and girls. I'm really looking forward to that. Who are you excited about? What are you excited about, Matt? Obviously, things are ramping up now. If you look outside, it's the tents are up. The race village is about to get going. We're 2 days away from kicking things off. So who are you excited about? What are you excited about? You've now been here for a day. You've been with the UTMB marketing team. So what's got you fired up about the Matt in 2024?
I think after chatting to Zane earlier this year, I had no idea what went into kind of the MUT by UTMB specifically and how much goes back into the community. So I think as an overall thing, I'm excited for George. Like, I think this is a huge deal. The mountains here are incredible, and specifically for athletes coming to run for the first time. Like, if this is your first MUT by UTMB, like there's only a first time you get to do MUT, right? It's going to be the best experience, like regardless of what happens on the day, like what the team is setting up and doing out here. It's incredible. So I'm stoked for people to kind of do it and enjoy even just the growth from last year to this year. Quite a lot of things have changed. So I'll leave that up to you guys to experience for yourselves. And I think I've had a couple of athletes who are racing on the podcast. I'm really stoked for Rebecca and Brandon. I think this is their backyard. They train here. So Rebecca doing the marathon and Brandon doing the miler. And
who's Brandon's surname?
Brandon Hulley. Mm-hmm. And this is round two for him of the miler. And they're cousins as well. Talk about like elite families keeping it in the family.
It's going to happen.
Unreal.
Rebecca's sister had a hole in her heart when she was born, by the way. A story for another time.
And
And her dad survived a shark. A shark bit his leg off and they saved his leg.
No
and
way.
And he runs Ironmans now.
Yeah, I mean,
she's easily the least.
Robin Owens, the Kienes, it's just like we can't all be overachievers.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. So I'm keen to see how they go running around their backyard, and they've trained here, and just to see the work come together. I'm stoked to see that. The 60K field, I don't really know who's in it. I need to brush up. But Skitzer is an athlete of mine, but also a friend, and this is his first time kind of leveling up to that distance. So that's going to be cool. I'm excited to see the women racing the 100K and the milers as well. I just think putting their hats in the ring for that and seeing those fields grow is really cool. I know, Gabriel Creel is coming back to do the miler. Great coach, great athletes. I'm keen to see what he does this year.
Yeah.
I think he had a great race last year. He probably won't say that. He's also humble.
I'm humble myself. Yeah.
Keen to see. And then Leon Fanny Kark is coming to do. I mean, she's just a George Mutt champ.
And whippersnapper. So fast.
So fast. So kind. So sweet. And she's also a friend. So stoked to see what she does. So yeah, there's quite a lot of exciting stuff happening this weekend.
So is that your move? Just like coach them and then become friends with them? Like, are you going to offer Robin? Like, that's a smart move. Listen. No, because then you establish yourself as the alpha, and then like, oh, they'll love you regardless.
No.
So it just so happens. I feel like
it's a proximity thing, like what we were saying about like Robin having cool friends.
Yes.
It's like, if you kick a bush in Stellenbosch, like a high-achieving, fast athlete will probably fall out. So like that's how I know Leon. Or it's actually just friends who all are like crazy good adventure racers and whatever. That's how we met. So just friends. I don't coach her. I don't coach Gabriel. But they're just cool humans, you know.
I don't believe in coincidence. I think you're setting this up. Listen, one of the things that I was thinking after we chatted yesterday was female athletes training for this kind of thing. It's something I was thinking about outside of the actual training as well. You know, you've got young girls and the physiology. I wanted to get into a little bit of this. The physiology of a man, woman, girl, boy.
Yeah.
Is there an age difference for when men and women should be stepping up? So moving from 20 to 40. Is it different in men and women? And should young girls be sort of cognizant of that, because, you know, as a young person, you think you can do anything and it doesn't matter. Yeah. I'm always going to be, you know, this. So should is the progression for men and women in terms of being able to handle a load different to men?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. I think, well, across the board, I would encourage people to get into the sport slowly. I think because trail running is still relatively new, there's not a lot of research that's older than 10 years out there if you want to go the research route. So there's lots of people with experience, but it's hard to say that that's going to be the same for everyone. If you want to take a big name, a great example is someone like Lucy Bartholomew running her first 100K when she was 16 years old. She will tell you not to do that. You know, at the time, it was epic. I think she was like, I'm 16 and I'm running 100Ks. You know, this is great and it's all wonderful and like the hype is there. And then it kind of catches up to you and then you need to take a 3-year break from sport altogether. So I would say just to get into it slowly, for men and women, give yourself time to get into the longer distances. That's kind of research is starting to point towards that. Injury prevention, there's lots of angles that you can go. And I think what we do know is that women kind of endurance-wise get better with age. So mm-hmm. you'll see the kind of top-performing athletes for female athletes. So for guys, I think their like prime is around about like 30 to 35, 38, that kind of range. Whereas women, the times that are faster and faster, it's maybe 5 years. They're 5 years older, if that makes sense. So 35 and past 40. Like, you're just getting into it. It's like, wow. You're going to do. And, yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff around, you know, once female athletes, if they've chosen to have kids, their pain threshold changes. So I think...
For the better or for...
For the better. So, I mean, then it's almost like nothing is harder than having a kid.
Got you.
100 miler. Yeah, let's go.
Hey, Robin Owen's going to come back a beast.
I know. Kids. That's why I'm like, be afraid.
She was already the best.
Yeah. And now she's had kids. So I'm like... It's going to be great. So, yeah, there is that when they should be getting into longer distances is slightly different. But again, so individualized. Certain people make adaptations better than others.
Uh-huh.
There are genetic things that play a role. You
and
know.
Do you offer that as a coach, as an offering? As like, like if somebody needs to go for the genetics test, or how would you build it for each athlete? Because what if an elite athlete, a Bianca Tarpeyton, might say in 2 or 3 years, all right, I'm 28 now or whatever. Is I feel like I am ready. But then you might say, as a scientist, do you offer that as a service, you as M. Robinson?
No, I don't. So that whole, the like DNA testing and things, definitely making an appearance. Mm-hmm. I think in some ways I struggle with that because I feel like people very easily put themselves into boxes. And mm-hmm. you know, if you're like, you've got some natural talent, you're a good, say, marathon distance runner, and then you do a DNA test that tells you, oh, you've actually got the wrong, you know, muscle fiber type. You're never going to be a great. It's just like, do you know what I mean? You're putting yourself into a box. And I'm like, you can still go for those things. I think if you're wanting to run a sub-2-hour marathon and be Eliud Kipchoge, that's a different situation.
Sure.
But the trail running, the endurance, a lot of that can be learned again, like over time. Like your body physically, you can change. Like as you develop an aerobic base, for example, the mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell,
mm-hmm.
changes. That's crazy. So that happens on a cellular level.
Very nerdy, by the way.
Very, very nerdy. Yeah, let me get
No. Keep going, but very nerdy.
I think if an athlete had to come to me and be like, I want to jump straight into 100K distances, what I do offer is advice. So mm-hmm. I am more an advocate for sustainable, like, sport. So it's like, I want to keep you running for as long as possible, you know, and it's also like you get into the why, it gets quite deep, you know, do you want to do 100Ks right now? Are you trying to prove something? Like, so many people can do it. It's just, you know, is this going to be good for you in the long term?
Got you.
So, yeah, not something I offer, but open to it if people want to go that route. There's a lot of testing, like the kind of metabolic side, which I have done, VO2 max, blood lactate, which can give you a good indication of where someone's at, and you can make recommendations of this is what you're ready for, this is what you would be really good at. But more than that, I think it's just if you give yourself enough time to prepare, you can do anything. Because let's face it, who do you meet that's just instantly ready to run a 100-mile race?
That's a very good point.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's really important, right? Is we are moving into, as the sport gets cool, people's egos come into it. Like, oh, I'm a good athlete.
Yeah.
So, and I'm 23. Like, whoa, build up to it. You know, otherwise, you know, one of my good mates, Johart van Heeren, had this exact thing. You know, he's a I mean, he's a world-class, his base is world-class. Yeah. And he kind of, I remember him saying to me, he felt like he did a little too much when he, remember when he was 23, he won SA Champs and he beat Ian Don Wachop and Ryan Sands. I think they were all at that marathon and was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
At 23. And he has said to me, maybe I've loaded it on a little quickly. And we've kind of seen his results lately, right? He's been more patient. He's a really scientific guy. I mean, I know you know him. But there's an example of like a creme de la creme guy who has admitted that maybe I could have done things a little bit more cleverly because, you know, at some stage you're going to have to pay the price.
Yeah.
Either you pay that price with patience up front, or if you're not patient, it's going to come. It's going to get you, which I think is important. I think especially at events like this, even for the elites to hear sometimes from guys like you and men and women, is that, hey guys, there's a correct way to do things.
Yeah.
Not an absolute way because nothing's perfect. We know that the science is, especially in our space and trail running, new. But I love that you're open to giving that advice and going, hey, here's the information. Because sometimes with elite athletes, you know this, there's no stopping them really.
Yeah. And that as well, I'm like, I've had different individuals who've done it, you know, and it's like, was it the right call or not? I don't know. And I think it's just making sure you come alongside and support them. You know, if they make the call, it's like, okay, not exactly. I've never been put in a situation where someone's made a call so severe that I don't agree with it.
So, got you.
For example, if someone's like, I want to run 100 miles in 6 weeks, I would just be like, I'm not going to touch that. Like, I've never run and but I luckily haven't been there. But I think just like supporting the person in that and then dealing with things as they come. And if there's a success, great. And I'm always open to be, you know, proven wrong.
Sure.
But I think just as you said, like Johart got into it at 23. That man's going to run. He's probably got a 30-year career ahead of him.
Yeah.
If that may be longer, depending on, you know, what he decides to go for. And I'm a huge fan of also, you know, Bianca and I chatted about this at a stage who was on the show yesterday. And
Bianca Tarbotton.
Tarbotton, yes. That's such a cool name. Yes. And, you know, she's like, I only do the marathon distance. She's like, I had to change that narrative. And she's like, doing that for her, that's what she's keen on. She wants to specialize and get... like basically fix all the mistakes that she's made and become a master at that before transitioning. So right now she's like, I don't want to run further than that. And I think she's dialing in and taking it to how fast can I get over this distance. And I wouldn't say that a marathon's easier, you know, than an ultra.
Sure.
If anything, I'm like, it's harder. It's a different type of hard, right? It's like that intensity is next level. To run a 4-hour, 15-minute otter is insane, you know? Yeah. And like, just like being able to finish 100K or 100 miler, that's also great. It's just like a different type of crazy, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Two things before we go. My cousin sent me a message about calling you. She said I was right. And my cousin doesn't agree with me on anything. She said Emily is an old person's name. So I did just want to tell you that. My cousin and I are very close. And she's not a liar. So okay. Emily is an old lady person's name.
Yeah.
I don't make the news. I report the news. Please. Yeah. So she said, I must tell you that. So that's the one thing. Lastly, when are you running the mutt? And when are you like, what are your distances as a coach? Because you can't just be a...
Yeah.
I'm just talking about it.
Yeah.
Are we getting stuck in here? Or what are we doing?
So I did the mutt 45 last year.
Jeez.
That was the best race of my life.
Yeah.
I think it all, and I'm not just saying that because I'm here. I've been working up to the longer distances. So when I got into the sport, 10K road athlete,
mm-hmm.
Well, actually, no, I used to chase after hockey balls at school.
Okay.
Or swim.
All right.
I actually hated running.
Okay.
And then I came to Stellenbosch or moved there. And then at 5 o'clock, everybody just exits whatever building they're in and either runs or cycles. And I was like, I need to make friends. So I'm going to start running.
Got you.
And then I did my first trail race by mistake. I was actually running in Yonkershoek and the Yonkershoek Mountain Challenge was happening. And then I just joined in and then I like almost died because I was like, had no food or water and I followed the 24K athletes on their long route. And yeah, funny situation. And then I was like, this is a sport. Like, cool.
Yeah.
Me and my road shoes and my... 3-inch shorts, which have luckily not made an appearance. And then I went granny. You see, that's I had to correct it. Extreme.
Well, you didn't correct it. Your name's Emily. You started granny and you're just leaning into yourself. But yes, I get the premise. Yeah.
And so I think I really like the marathon distance. I would say that's a favorite. Done a couple of you know, the 25K or UTCT styled racing. That's mm-hmm. fun. Love the UTD 32. But yeah, I think marathon I really liked. George was the first time that I'd done something like that.
When's our next race, coach?
When's our next race? I find it really hard.
We've got to put a pressure on you. Yeah. Like PhD now, because when you do the PhD, you're not going to have any time to train, are you?
I feel like I hope my supervisors don't watch this. I feel like I'll always find time for running, yeah. You know. I would rather add a year to my PhD than like not run.
Don't worry about it. No one has the internet. And yeah. They'll never be able to find this clip if you ever say why you're late. No one will ever know. The internet, you know what the nice thing about the internet is? It's not forever. The internet never remembers anything. And Google doesn't exist, so don't worry about it. Yeah.
Luckily, one of my supervisors is an avid runner himself, and I low-key feel like he's like, he'll never say it, but it's like if I'm late because I ran, he's kind of like, oh, good job, you know, how was it? But he won't win that, you know, he's like, oh, no, Emily, don't be late.
Okay.
But next race, I struggle to do races that my athletes do because I'm like, oh, I want to be there for them. And if I'm running, it's a bit tricky. So I'm actually, I have a 10K entry for Sunday just for fun. I was like, don't you want to run?
No, I don't. I'm working. No. I'm literally going to be the guy on the finish line.
I know, but I'm like, multitasking.
No, you should run. Well, like, you can't be on the outside professing how great this thing is. So I will
show up. I missed the 25K entries. Lol, I would have loved to do that.
Okay.
If only we knew someone who could change that.
No. But I'm not getting involved in the politics of it. I'm a service supplier to the race. So I want to end it off on that. So you are running the 10K on Monday?
Yeah, okay. On Sunday.
Sunday. All right, we're going to end it off on that. Good stuff, Em. All right, let's start a campaign. Hashtag show up. We'll start that campaign. Let's start a campaign. Hashtag show up. That is to make sure that Em shows up on Sunday. And if she doesn't, by the way, I will report that news. I want to be very clear. Again, I am not a good person. A lot of people make that mistake because, you know what it is? I figured it out. It's because I'm not very good looking, but what I do have is a personality. So people think, if he's not good looking, he has to be a good person to kind of, I'm not a good person. Let me be 100% clear. I will expose Em if she doesn't show up. Hashtag show up. Put that on social media. You know what I believe in? Peer pressure. Put a lot of pressure on Em to be there. Em, appreciate you. We've got two more days together. Great to have you. My name is MKT. We're out the mutt. Ladies and gentlemen, for today, it has been the MKT show. And for now, we are the hell out of here.
Yo, I put it like wow. This that sound. These oaks don't work hard like me, I hope they know by now. Baobab, stand my ground. Throw these money trees, go overseas like Percy Tau. I'll make sure you stay around, quiet when I'm under loud. No negatives allowed, me positivity took a vow. I always play to win, don't anticipate loss. Mind always in the climb, my boy. Never think about the drop, never ever ever think about the drop.